For decades, Americans have paid more for prescription drugs than anyone else in the developed world. Sometimes two, three, even four times more for the same medication. Tonight, we're going to ask why. Now, President Trump says real health care reform is impossible unless drug prices come down. And his plan puts pharmaceutical reform at the center of the fight. We're going to break down how generic drugs lower cost, how foreign governments manipulate global pricing, and whether most favored nation pricing could finally stop Americans from subsidizing the world. Two experts, one debate, and one question. Can drug reform actually fix the American healthcare? I'm Scotty Nell Hughes, and this is Perspective. For years, Washington has argued about healthcare coverage versus cost, public versus private, ideology versus reality. But here's the truth most politicians avoid. You cannot fix healthcare without fixing drug prices. Americans don't use more medicine than Europeans. We don't manufacture worse drugs. We don't have lower standards. What we do have is a system in which American patients foot the bill so that foreign governments can negotiate lower prices. That's not really compassion. It's bad economics and worse policy. Now, President Trump's health care plan makes drug reform a central pillar, arguing that pharmaceutical costs distort everything from insurance premiums to Medicare solvency to family budgets. His administration pushes aggressive generic approvals, transparency rules, and most controversially, the idea of most favored nation pricing, tying what Americans pay to the lowest prices paid overseas. Now, supporters say this is long overdue for leverage. Critics say it risks innovation and access. Tonight, we're going to cut through the politics to examine the policy, what works, what doesn't, and whether this movement could finally reset the system. Now, let's bring in our guest. Joining me tonight is John Potter, Executive Director of the Coalition Against Pharma Patent Abuse, and Andrew Langer, Executive Director of the Coalition Against Socialized Medicine. Thank you for joining me, gentlemen, on this very important issue. I think what we see is a change in healthcare policy that America is on the brink on. Let's start off with you. I want to start off with you on this, Andrew, because why do Americans pay more for the same prescription drugs than patients in virtually every other developed country? Is this a market failure or is this policy design?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a market failure, but really on the part of the international marketplace. Our healthcare system is so markedly different than so many others that when you have government-run health systems abroad, they are essentially in charge of setting the prices that their consumers pay. One of the problems that then ensues is they're negotiating with our pharmaceutical companies that are based here at home. Some of them are based abroad as well. They are negotiating these prices with them, and what happens is that they wind up making Americans foot more of the bill. What they're running is a fine line between allowing these prices to be set, but avoiding the risk of having their patents seized by countries abroad and then automatically turned into some kind of generic version, which we try to avoid those things.
Well, and that's one of the talking points coming a lot from conservatives today about any sort of reform. But, John, you've been around. You've noticed that there has been, from a regulatory standpoint, has Washington tolerated this imbalance on both sides because it was politically convenient to both parties that whenever they're in power?
It's hard for me to speak to the parties in power, right, or for the parties in power. They do a pretty good job speaking for themselves. I think that Andrew's reference to the fact that the national governments in Europe are negotiating on behalf of their consumers gives them market power, right? So all of a sudden you have the health ministry of the UK is negotiating with GSK, or they're negotiating with another company on behalf of hundreds of thousands of patients, if not millions of patients, right? And that gives them leverage in those negotiations, and they take advantage of that leverage and get their consumers lower prices. Here, We have PBMs negotiating. And I think Congress would tell you that PBMs are not the strongest negotiators. And others might tell you that PBMs are negotiating aggressively, but then putting that money in their pockets rather than passing the savings on to consumers. I can't speak to it. I don't know any PBMs personally. But what I can tell you is that the dynamics are different. And we know for certain that Americans are paying higher prescription drug prices than most folks are for the very same drugs around the world.
And for once, I do believe that we're seeing a conversation on how to get those drug prices down. Andrew, President Trump, when he got into office, almost out of the gate, said he wanted to accelerate generic drug approvals. How significant do you believe that was in the effort to actually lowering prices, but also in theory, not only in the pharmacy, but also the manufacturing of them themselves?
Let's take a step back for a second, Scotty, and let's recognize that fundamentally most of the healthcare problems that we have in America, and really anything that has to do with the price that consumers pay, whether it's for medical services or whether it's for some pharmaceuticals themselves, it's a resource economics problem, right? So when you have a limited supply of something and you have a high demand of that something, the prices are naturally going to be higher. Now, obviously, we can talk about the ways that this gets distorted in the marketplace. So certainly this is an issue when it comes to access to doctors and nurses and physicians' assistants. That's one component of this. But when it comes to the pharmaceutical side of it, right, the only way you can bring down the price of a drug for consumers is for when it moves off of being a name brand pharmaceutical, getting past its period of what's called exclusivity, right, which is the amount of time that our patent system is given to pharmaceutical makers and innovators of all kinds to recoup their investment in that drug. And once that period passes, then it can become a generic pharmaceutical. And that drives down the cost considerably, 90% reduction in drug prices. And so what we need to do is make sure that the name brand pharmaceutical companies aren't putting their thumb on the scale for when the transition happens from that name brand to the generic. And this is certainly going to be true in the biosimilars realm, now that we have so many biologics that are coming on the market. So that's how we get at this. So it is significant insofar as the key to getting prescription drug prices down in a truly free marketplace is ensuring that they transition from name brand to generic.
Well, and this is where intellectual property debates start coming in, but there's more to it than just the simple, the drug itself, that initial instigation of it. Because, John, do generics meaningfully discipline brand name pricing, or are there structural barriers like patent gamesmanship that also blunt their impact?
All of the above. So I think Andrew is correct that but there's certainly something when the brand name is the only drug in a market, right? Because it has a patent, it has exclusivity, and that's a righteous outcome. There are things that the president can be doing and that governments can be doing to bring down prices for Americans by elevating the prices for Europeans, right? And by sharing the pain more equally around the world. And so most favored nations or whatever, however the president wants to pursue that has value. The second point is when that patent expires, generic competition should be unleashed and prices generally drop 50 to 80% in year one, and they drop by 90% in year three after generics hit the market. So then the question becomes, are generics actually getting to market as fast as they should be, or is big pharma playing patent games and pushing that generic farther and farther away so that they can maintain their exclusivity, their market power, their high prices for longer and longer and longer? And the answer is yes and yes and yes. They are playing games. They are pushing out the generic competition for several years further than it should be. And Congress and the administration, the president, need to step up to the plate. It's not about generic approvals. It's about getting the generics to the market.
But, John, is this just growing pains? Is this something to be expected? Because were we dealing with this issue 30 years ago, 40 years ago? Or is this just because we have so many options now today with technological advances in medicine that there are more options for generics? Is this something that we could have averted this crisis today?
Oh, this is nothing to do with technological innovation, right? The bioequivalency of generics is technologically challenging, but it's done. The 30 and for, so let's start from the beginning. Congress passed legislation in 1984 that promised balanced promised a balanced marketplace that's both supported brand pharma and also supported generics. And what they did in 1984 was they extended brand pharma's patents by a few years. And said, you know what, it's really hard to get things through FDA. We understand regulation for safety is slowing things down. We're going to give you a few extra years of patent protection, a few extra years of high prices and market exclusivity. But in return, you've got to get a clear path to market for generics, because what generics need is market stability and legal clarity. That's when they will invest in generics. That's when prices will plummet. And that's a good thing. After pharma gets its profits, its high profits from the patented era, and it is the balance that's been thrown out of whack in the last 10 years or so by pharma's gamesmanship.
Well, the big question, as you point out, those prices would drop. But Andrew, last question to you for this segment: if drug prices do fall, do insurance premiums actually go down, or do insurers simply pocket the difference?
Well, this gets into the PBM issue and the incentives that certain hospitals and clinics have in essentially getting reimbursed for name brands over generics. This is one of the central issues in the PBM debate. When an insurance company that has its own PBM will force a provider to prescribe a name brand pharmaceutical when a generic would do just as well. There's a real problem there. So there's a lot that's going on here, Scotty.
Thank you. John Potter, Andrew Langer, stay right there, because after the break, if drug reform is so popular with American voters, why hasn't Washington done it sooner? And how will a new policy affect America's most favored nation when we return? Welcome back. We're examining how drug pricing reform fits into President Trump's healthcare vision and whether it could permanently reset the system. Now let's continue with our guest. Joining me tonight is John Potter, Executive Director of the Coalition Against Pharma Patent Abuse, and Andrew Langer, Executive Director of the Coalition Against Socialized Medicine. Thanks for staying with me, gentlemen.
Happy to do it.
Perfect. John, I want to start with you on this one. Explain what most favored nation pricing in plain terms is. And what does it actually do? And why does it terrify or benefit the pharmaceutical industry?
So most favored nation pricing most favored nation is an issue that is pervasive throughout the economy between buyers and sellers. Right. So in our case, the buyer, in this case, let's assume it's President Trump and the United States, right, would be negotiating against drug companies, and they would say to the drug companies, you must give us the same prices you give anybody else around the world. You not only have to give us those prices, you have to tell us when you lower the prices to anybody, the other country, and then you have to give us the precisely same price. That means we are essentially the most favored nation, right? Anybody that gets it, we get it too. Does that help drug companies? Does it hurt drug companies? I'm not sure that it does either, because if the drug company can capture the same amount of revenue across the world, does it matter to the company whose prices go up and whose prices go down, as long as the prices are level for everybody? I think what the drug companies are concerned about is that everybody is going to get the lowest price. Nobody is going to any longer pay a higher price. And therefore, if our prices go down to where other prices are, those prices are not going to rise up, right? We're not going to meet in the middle. Everybody's prices are going to go down. That's what scares the drug companies.
Okay, so Andrew, you heard that, and I assume you agree with how John has described how this is going to affect the drug companies. Why is that bad for the consumer? It might be bad for the pharmaceutical company, but is that bad for the consumer, whether you're in the United States or any other country around the world?
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the problem, right? I mean, it's one thing to get other nations to pay their fair share, which is part of what this is about. There's a negotiating tactic that's at work to try to get other nations, when they're doing this, to pay more for their drugs. The fine line is whether or not the drugs that are more controversial or it's difficult to get the prices changed, whether or not all of a sudden the patents get seized by somebody in India or somebody in China or somewhere else where they then get manufactured for a song and it sort of undercuts everything. The problem is generally price controls don't work. They tend to stymie innovation. They take away, at the end of the day, the incentive to engage in the research and development. And it's something, you know, as a free market, limited government conservative, it's something that I have been steadfastly opposed to, you know, when it was talked about during the Obama administration, when it was talked about during the first Trump administration, and when it was talked about in the Biden administration. And so I stand against it now. The reality is there are so many other things that we can be doing to bring down the price for consumers. I would much rather see that than rather we start engaging in price controls. And I think that's true for everything. As I said, this is a basic resource economics issue. If you want to lower the price of a good that's in high demand, increase the supply.
Well, it's interesting that you bring this up because, John, I know your work is really nonpartisan, and so you try to actually just help focus on the generic drugs itself. But do you feel like that potentially any reforms that might happen within the generic pricing might also have some diplomatic, if not trade issues, in other aspects to other countries between the United States?
I think that if the United States changes our law to make generic drugs market entry clear and stable, that prices will go down by, and the system, right? Consumers will save billions of dollars a year. Insurance companies will save billions a year. Employers will save billions of dollars a year. And it will not have any impact on the trade issue. I think that what we need to do is reform the Hatch-Waxman Act, bring it back to what we had in the 1980s when Congress first created the balanced system. We need to essentially rebalance in order to bring back that balance. At that point, we will then have the pharmaceutical manufacturers, the big pharma guys, will make all the money that they should make. But then when their patents expire and their time is up, generics will come to market. We will have competition, prices will plummet, and then simultaneously to that, right, then you go back to that question of should we be doing MFN status for the brand drugs when they are exclusive, and that brings us back to Andrew's challenge, or the challenge that he referenced, which is that if all the prices go down, and they only go down for everybody across the globe, then is there enough money in the system to support R&D? Is there enough money in the system so that those patents actually have value? That's a separate question. And I'm sympathetic to the fact that if prices are going down for the U.S. market, prices probably will need to go up in the European market.
And that's where we come back to you on this, because this makes it very political. A political issue, Andrew, on that side of it, because on that side, you know, big pharma that we talk about a lot of times does have a lot of power, a lot of control within Washington, D.C. and legislation. Do we see that same sort of power by the same companies in other countries? And will that have an effect? I mean, are they basically fighting themselves here based on their international corporations and their international presence?
Well, they're looking at their international marketplaces and seeing what the balance is. And then this is essentially the classic free rider problem that free market economists talk about. The answer, of course, is that we don't adopt the anti-market policies of other nations at the end of the day. The bottom line here is there is so much going on in this healthcare system. It is so complicated and so complex that it makes it so that there are lots of different areas to deal with. And, you know, when we look at the other sort of regulatory barriers that are inside it, I mean, I had a meeting with some folks last week in which we were talking about how anti-CFC, you know, the rules to fix the ozone layer created a new set of delivery devices for breathable drugs, you know, things that kids with asthma are supposed to use. And it essentially made it so you no longer had a generic version of these delivery systems. That doesn't serve consumers at all. So we need to be engaging in these discussions. We need to figure out where the barriers to entry are. And we need to make sure that those regulatory inadequacies are taken care of.
Well, it's interesting because you just brought up a very, very serious question that I've never thought about. are just like what you see with other legislation that's passed or other rulings from the Supreme Court. If there is generic drug reform to sort of what your company, what your corporation, what your nonprofit is advocating for, John, do you think other companies might say, wait a minute, we also deserve patent reform? Do you think this could obviously be one of the first dominoes that open for other industries that say we don't have fair drug, we don't have fair patent reform for our industry?
I don't see it. The Hatch-Waxman Act is very, very particular. It's very narrow, and it applies only to the balance, the pivot point, right, at which the brand drugs patents end and generic market competition begins. We have seen software patent issues that popped up around 10 years ago in the patent troll debate. And in some regards, that's resolved itself. In some regards, that has the threat to come back because we now have a Department of Commerce and that seems to be much more in favor of software patents and has a different standard for patenting than has been in the recent past. But I don't see it opening up for broad patent reform in a way which would upset the apple cart for other industries.
Scotty, if I can just jump in here on that point, you know, that was, you know, certainly the issue during the Biden administration and somewhat of a discussion under the Trump administration. There's another law called the Bayh-Dole Act of 1980, which is not specific about pharmaceuticals, but it's about general innovation. Under the Biden administration, they were talking about using what's called a march-in right or a march-in power to seize the patent for pharmaceuticals that they wanted to create price controls on. And one of the things that we pointed out and others pointed out was because Bayh-Dole has such broad appeal, it applies not just to pharmaceutical technologies, but other technologies as well. It could have sweeping impacts. But you raise the point, we should always be looking at the more general and unintended consequences of whatever decisions the government is going to make.
Well, I'm going to keep this with you, Andrew, because I know you're more political on this one. You know, there's a lot of controversy going right now against President Trump because we have not seen a health care reform package. You are still having the majority of Americans that are paying just extreme premiums right now with no solution in sight for that. If there is able to get generic drug reform here in the short term, is that going to be enough, do you think, to still to be a win for the base when Republicans go to the voting polls and hope to be reelected in the midterms?
Is generic reform enough? No. But if you combine generic reform with PBM reform, with pricing reform, with the various changes to the Affordable Care Act, which may include greater HSA options, I think that's a real win. And I think that's a realistic way to look at it. The bottom line is, it's all about the supply. We need to be doing whatever we can to increase the supply of doctors, nurses, physicians, assistants, and medical care and pharmaceuticals in America.
That's a lot of reforms. I think you have a lot of expectations for Washington, D.C. in the next 8 months, Andrew. Probably more action than we've seen on a single issue, probably in the history of the Beltway. But I appreciate your optimism for that. Andrew Langer, John Potter, thank you so much for joining me with this discussion.
Always.
Thank you.
For decades, Americans were told high drug prices were the cost of innovation and the price of leadership. But leadership doesn't mean writing blank checks. It means using leverage responsibly. Now, President Trump's health care plan puts drug reform where it belongs, at the center of the conversation, not as a talking point, but as a structural correction, generic competition, international fairness, and the radical idea that Americans shouldn't pay more simply because they can. Whether most favored nation pricing is the final answer remains debated, but the premise is no longer optional. A healthcare system that bankrupts families at the pharmacy counter is not sustainable, and a global market that relies on Americans' overpayment is not ethical. The real question isn't whether drug reform is possible. It's whether Washington has the will to finish the fight that has now begun. I'm Sky Nell Hughes. Thank you for watching.